Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight, I want to welcome back to the show, Ken Swartz. He is the founder and chief science officer of C60 Purple Power, a health and wellness company committed to delivering the highest quality C60 products available. He spent the early part of his career as a secondary school teacher and is passionate about helping and educating people. He has run several research science laboratories over the course of his career and discovered C60 while developing the MOXIE fusion reactor. During his research, he became aware of the powerful free radical neutralizing properties of C60 and began using it as a radiation protectant while participating in a fusion reactor project. He noticed after taking C60 for a couple of months that not only was it protecting him from the radiation, it was improving his overall health. In 2016, he founded C60 Purple Power. He is also an avid researcher of the UFO and alien phenomenon and was a former consultant to MUFON. Ken, welcome. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, tonight's going to be fun. We're going to discuss more about the power of C60, its benefits, and my own testimony, and we're going to get into a little ufology, contact, and abduction phenomenon. First, I have to say it's been about nearly 2 months since I've been taking C60. I take about a teaspoon of each of the coconut, the avocado, and the olive oil mixed with some juice once a day, and I have more energy than I've had in years. I feel great. I feel overall healthier. I'm sleeping better. And I've even lost a lot of weight. I'm telling you, Ken, this stuff is awesome.
Yeah, that's what a common thing to C60. I mean, see, as we age, a lot of the antioxidants that our body, you know, our cells formerly made when we were younger kind of go down. And so, you know, a lot of the metabolism and quality of life goes down. But once C60 gets in there, it replaces those missing antioxidants. So your cellular chemistry can go back to the way it was when you were much younger. And of course, you feel like when you were much younger and your health just gets so much better.
I do. I've even had people tell me I look younger, which I don't see that yet, but you know, maybe getting there. But you have your own story of C60. I don't think we covered this last time, that it actually healed your macular degeneration.
Yeah, when we were working on the metal oxygen fusion reactor project, you know, a lot of the former people that have been researching in that area, and I was like the late doctor this and the late doctor that, you know, they're just a bunch of dead researchers. So we didn't want to go down that same pathway. So I went looking for something that would protect against, you know, radiation, because we didn't know what we were dealing with. You know, there could be unknown forms of radiation. So I went out and I learned about this carbon-60, and they basically, you know, they gave one set of rats carbon-60, and the control group didn't get any carbon-60. Then they hit them with multiple fatal doses of radiation, and like, all the control rats that didn't get carbon-60 died. None or very few of the C60 rats died, and then they lived long lives. So it was quite amazing. When I learned about that, I said, I'm going to get some of that for my crew and myself. So we were taking it during the project, and then I just kept taking it afterwards because it really helped my health a lot. And about 7 months after taking it, I went to the eye doctor, and I had dry macular degeneration, and it had totally disappeared. He was kind of surprised with that. And
wow, that's amazing. Now, for those that don't know, C60, it's a super antioxidant, right?
Yeah, it's a little carbon molecule shaped just like, actually, it's, we'll just look at the bottom. The green screen does crazy things. At the little things behind me, there are 60 carbon models shaped like a little soccer ball. And what it is, it's a most amazing antioxidant. And unlike other molecules, see, that's like antioxidants, they hit an oxidative radical, get some, and then they change their form and they have to be reset. C60 can reset itself. It has, it pulls, I don't know if we can see a little bit of these, inside the molecule, they actually pulls hydrogen ions from the environment inside of it. It makes it slightly positively charged. Now, most oxidative radicals are negatively charged, so they stick to the C60 molecule, and then the C60 molecule releases a hydrogen ion and neutralizes the oxidative radical back to water, oxygen, or whatever it is. And resets itself. So it can do it over and over and over and over, you know, dozens of times. And the thing is, it's also a selective antioxidant. It only goes after like superoxygen, which is an oxygen with an extra electron, hydroxyl radical, hydrogen peroxide, peroxynitrate maybe, and, you know, the really high energy oxidative radicals. And it doesn't go for like lower things like nitrogen oxides. And there's some other oxidative radicals. Your body actually uses oxidative radicals in a signaling system. ROSs, they're in the signaling system, and they're based on zinc, sulfur and iron, it doesn't interfere with those. That's why when they did testing of C60, even at 10,000 times what like a person might be taking, it had no negative side effects because it only deals with high energy oxidative radicals, which are really important in regulating stuff in the mitochondria, and it doesn't interfere with the signaling molecules, and so it has virtually no toxicity.
What is the most common, benefit that's reported from people that have been taking C60 a while? We talked about, you know, energy, an overall feeling of wellness, youthfulness. What else are people are getting from C60?
Well, there's other things like virility. That's another thing. Your libido goes way up, so be prepared for that. And also just athletic performance. We have a lot of people that do athletic things with C60, and you know they went from mid-pack to like leaders in their field. I won't say any names. We already had some horses do that too back there in some foreign country. They were giving them a whole bunch of C60, and they went from mid-pack to winning their races. But I wouldn't want to say names. So yeah, it just takes you from, you know, it just brings everything back up so you can do maximum performance. And it has just amazing benefits, you know, like that. And we also have, there's other crazy weird woo-woo benefits because we have like a lot of psychics and dowsers and remote viewers use our product, and they say it really helps in what they do. It kind of like clears out the static. So whatever their skill is,
I'm glad you said that because I wasn't going to bring this up, but since I've been taking C60, I've had these synchronicities, these strange synchronistic events that have been ramping up since I've taken it. It's very strange. Like I'll be thinking of a song and then a few minutes later it'll start playing or I'll see, you know, certain numbers over and over again. It's very strange. It's like it ramped up since I started taking it. I don't know if it's connected in any way. It's just maybe a coincidence, but hey, it's something.
Oh yeah, a lot of people describe that this happens. And so it's just like things just start working out. The synchronicities come together. So, you know, things come together when they need to come together. So it actually makes a huge progress in people's lives. People are kind of stuck in the mud. They weren't getting forward. And then all of a sudden, everything just starts working and they can move forward on their projects or their ideas or whatever it is that they're doing. It just seems to, it hooks you into like whatever the universal cosmic consciousness or the flow of the universe. I don't know how you want to call it. But it hooks you in and then you start moving forward. It's amazing.
That is amazing. Now, I have a few people asking me, you know, about the dosage, how much they should be taking. You know, I just started out with, you know, one or two teaspoons a day. And, you know, I could go up to maybe a couple of tablespoons, but, you know, no more than that. How much do you think, if you know, especially if you're first starting out, how much should you be taking?
Okay, well, that's two things. There's by body weight and by age. Now, for they found in many scientific studies, they found that the effective dose was 0.1 milligrams per kilogram. Now, translated, that means a tablespoon of C60 would be enough for a 330-pound, let's say youthful age person, right? So basically, a half of that would be like a teaspoon, and a half would be like enough for 160-pound, 170-pound person, right? That would be enough for them if they're like, let's say, in their 30s, 20s, 30s, maybe 40s. Now, as you get older, you need more too because your metabolism. So if you're like in your 60s or go pushing 70s, then maybe more like a tablespoon would be appropriate. And we have some people take like two tablespoons a day. But beyond that, I'm not sure how effective it is. You know, I think there's a little bit, you know, that you can just take it has no toxicity, but you might just be taking more than you need. Now, we had a doctor who was, you know, doctors are crazy and they have sometimes a bit money. So he was taking like 2 ounces at a time, right? And he was a day. So he was just, yeah. And he said he started getting psychic experiences. He could read his wife's mind before she said something. She knew what he wanted him to do and all that kind of stuff. And some people said, nah, he was just responding well to training. But anyway, that's what he said.
Wow. Now, another question I've been getting is, you know, how long until I feel the effects? Me personally, I was feeling, you know, a little bit more energetic the first day, the first couple of days. And I also had this kind of cleansing effect to where all the bad stuff was coming out for the first few days or even up to a week. And then, you know, everything went back to normal, even better than normal. You know, what should people expect?
Well, that's part of the thing. Yeah. First off, you get, if you get like increased energy, increased clarity, just everything just seems to work. And you can have, if you got a lot of toxins in, you got a lot of mouth metal, there will be a, you can have a little bit of an, I guess, a cleansing experience. And the best thing to do is just take a lot of water, extra water, just so it flushes that out. And you also might want to take, eat extra fiber or something, because if your body's, your liver is flushing it out through the gallbladder, you know, that's another way things flush out. If you got a lot of fiber in there, to binds to it and gets out of your body. So those are two. And after about a week, that goes away. And then you just start seeing, you know, consistent improvements. Now, a lot of what happens, there's like a short-term thing that you get the immediate energy increase and focus and all that. But over long-term, because the C60 gets into like the endoplasmic reticulum and the mitochondria, and that's where the proteins, the endoplasmic reticulum is where the proteins are built. So your body can start rebuilding itself. So over like 3 months, 6 months and that stuff. It's like, for instance, my friend Gary Rodriguez, he's the electrical engineer on the MOXIE project. And he had actually, after I had my experience, I talked to him, and he had actually developed wet macular degeneration because he had a little type 2 diabetes. And he has, there's horrible lesions from the inside of his eye. And in fact, you can go to Eyes, we have a YouTube channel, C60 Purple Power, and you can go to the episode Eyes on C60. And you can see like his before and after pictures, his eyes were full of lesions. He's an engineer. He's going to lose his ability to, you know, do his profession. And after a year of taking C60 Purple Power, we have the after pictures, and all the lesions are gone. They're all healed up. And I want to say something here, put the disclaimer in. C60 doesn't heal anything. What C60 does, C60 lifts the oxidative burden the cells are under. And that means that the cell's regular chemistry can work the way it's supposed to be, and the cells heal themselves. So that's how the healing occurs. It's your own body having the capacity to heal itself now that the oxidative burden has been lifted.
Now, the only complaint I've ever gotten about C60 is, why does it cost so much? Now, I know the answer, but go ahead.
It's hard to make. I mean, they have to, it's C60, and the people that discovered it got a Nobel Prize in 1996, but they have to actually imitate the outer atmosphere of giant red stars in the laboratory. And to make, you know, they have a light helium atmosphere, you have two electrical rods, carbon rods, you run electricity through it, and that makes the powder. And then there's a whole complicated process of purifying it. Some people use a solvent method using toluene, but we use sublimated C60, which you basically take the C60 and the carbon ashes and heat it up. And sublimation is like evaporation. If you heat something up, it's a solid turns into a gas. So the sublimator basically heats the ashes and C60 up to about 400 Celsius. The C60 evaporates, it floats across the sublimator where it's colder, condenses, and that's how we get our high purity C60. But it's an expensive process, and it takes a long time.
Now, I don't think I asked you about this last time, but what is activated charcoal C60?
Basically, it's just activated charcoal. There might be a tiny bit of C60, like in the wick of your candle. You know, you blow out the candle, you see the little black wick in the candle. That's about 0.25% C60. And there might be in charcoal, you know, 0.1% C60 or some infinitely small amount of C60, because it's, you know, kind of present in nature. But it's not like we have 99.99% pure C60, not 0.1% or something. So you'd have to actually eat a bucket of charcoal to get enough C60 as an effective amount, right? And if you ate a bucket of charcoal, life would be difficult for you. So, you're not going to get C60 out of activated charcoal.
Okay, I got you. Now, women versus men, are women going to see different effects versus, you know, the effects men are going to see?
Well, one of the things is that C60, once the C60 gets in the mitochondria, and basically as we age, there's two main antioxidants that mitochondria need to run, because mitochondria are like little furnaces. They make the ATP for the cell. And as the mitochondria burn, they produce a thing called superoxygen, which is an oxygen with an extra electron. And then that's broken down by SOD, which is an antioxidant, into hydrogen peroxide. And the hydrogen peroxide is broken down by catalase. C60 can do the job of both of those. And so that goes down. And so you don't have the mitochondria, can't function as much. Well, C60 gets in there, your mitochondria are functioning fully. Now, another thing mitochondria make is pregnenolone. And pregnenolone is like the precursor molecule for all the hormones. So your hormones, and when this starts up, your hormones are going to come back everywhere. So whether it's your pineal or your pituitary gland, your adrenal glands, you know, and they make a lot of, you know, they make mineral corticoids. So your blood pressure stuff goes in, glucocorticoids, like Gary, he got, not only did his wet macular degeneration totally heal, his type 2 diabetes went away. And that's more like the refunctioning of all these hormones that, you know, were so low, and then the body can work itself. So female, you know, women can often, you know, have, you know, if they have menopause, they might go backwards and start having, you know, the cycle again.
Wow, very interesting. Now, another awesome thing is it helps fight inflammation. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, hugely. And it does it by, well, does it several ways. One way is basically inflammation is caused by oxidative radicals. And it's like rusting your body. Your body is rusting, and that causes damage. And then when the cells say, oh, we're being damaged, they send out messages, and you get macrophages, type A get in there, and they have cytokines that, you know, they can really, and you get basically this huge thing. What C60 does, it gets in there, it stops the oxidative radicals before they do damage. So then the cells don't send out that messages. But also C60 gets into the immune cells, and it kind of moderates the way they function. So they function better, because there's a stage, like when you get certain antigens get into certain various, like the P cells and stuff, they'll send out a bunch of oxidative radicals with inside the cell. Well, C60 is in there, it kind of slows the flow. So you get a balanced immune response. You get like hyperinflation, hyperinflammation. A lot of people take C60, their allergies go way down, because you know your allergies are caused by your immune system malfunctioning. So if you've got C60, now your immune system is going to moderate. It's going to work kind of the way it's supposed to work. And so you don't get like a huge, you can heal up, but you don't get like a huge overreaction, like the immune response that causes allergies.
Good. Now, is there anything else you'd like to add about C60 before we move on to talking about a little ufology?
Well, you know, we have links to science papers, and there's just dozens and dozens of science papers. This isn't just, you know, going out there, but there are just so many science papers where they've actually done studies, you know, with rats or human skin cells in the laboratory or whatever else it is, and then they have the results. So you can look at the results and read them yourselves. And of course, you know, there's only a few human, we did a one human study with eyes, and everybody's eyes got better. They didn't cure the cataracts, but certainly helped macular degeneration. So, you know, it's, and eventually there are human studies undergoing right now. But in the meantime, you can look at all the science studies and people's personal experiences. So that's just the, you know, check it out for yourself. Don't just take my word for it. And with anything, not just with C60, but, you know, you should check things out for yourself, because, definitely, you know, that's, you have to take responsibility for your health and make your own decisions, because a lot of the sick care industry is really about making money. It's not about healing you.
Definitely. Yes, go to c60purplepower.com/knowledge10 to get 10% off and free shipping. You do want to definitely check this stuff out. It's awesome. Okay, now you were a former consultant to MUFON. Let's talk about some of your favorite UFO cases.
Well, there's several UFO cases I've been involved in. There's some I can't talk about, you know. But like the Stan Romanek story, I was involved in that almost from the beginning. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of that.
Well, yeah, for those that aren't familiar, tell us a little bit about the Stan Romanek story.
Yeah, Stan Romanek, he's a kind of interesting guy. I know his sister Ann too. And he's one of those abductees. And, you know, he didn't really understand what was happening to him. He was a super skeptic. But he's had multiple abductions. And he's had things happen where there's been like dozens of people will be around, and there'll be like an event. Like, you know, they had one in Stone Creek Park down here in Lakewood, you know, this big old, you know, thing came down, and there was like dozens and dozens of people in the park. Right. So, and so it's not just one person. And so he has a whole history that he does. And I mean, I've seen his back, he's got so many scoop marks in his back, and it looks like a checkerboard. I don't really trust what aliens say, or, you know, because they just, I would take, you take aliens' words for a grain of salt. As far as my, you know, thing, just let people get a historical perspective. You know, back in the 50s, you know, the alien space brothers used to come down here, and they'd meet with the people, and they'd tell them, oh, we're from Venus, and we're from Mars or Jupiter, right, or whatever. Well, you know, we didn't know anything about Venus and Mars, right? Now we know that Venus is like an oven, and Mars is like this frozen rock, right? So that's not going to go anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Either they were very deceptive or the people were just, you know, Looney Tunes, you know.
Yeah. Now they say that, you know, some of the aliens like the Barney and Betty Hill case, they say, oh, we're from Zeta Reticuli. Well, we can't go to Zeta Reticuli to check out if they're really from there. So, you know, just saying, you know, that they probably, you know, if I was an alien, I probably wouldn't tell humans where I'm from. Just as humans are a rather violent, warlike species. So, yeah, I'd say, yeah, no, I'm from over there, you know, where the big baddies live or something. Yeah, I would not tell them where I come from.
Yeah, definitely. Now, what got you involved with the Romanet case?
Oh, I was I was kind of working with MUFON, and I was actually I think I gave my first. I went to this. There's a listeners that Art Bell stuff way back. It was called the listeners. It was like a fan. I gave a speech at the same meeting that Stan Romanek did his first like presentation about his experiences, and that's how I met him. And I think I was doing mine on Trevor James Constable and weather modification. I used to know him. He's passed away, but and then that's how I met Stan, and I kind of met all the people involved, and I've been kind of on the sidelines of watching it all there. And it's an interesting experience, you know, his experience is the average, you know, it's interesting what people have, you know, the alien experiences, and you can read about it and stuff, but what happens to people when you come out and talk about that stuff, whether it's problems with the U.S. government or people that think they're going to make $1 million off of you, right? There's a lot of people like that. Oh yeah, I'm going to get in the story. I'm going to, you know, put it on film. I'm going to make $1 million in the premier movie. And so, yeah, so you get problems from a lot of different places besides aliens.
Now, you made a good point. Like, you know, you hear some stories where it's all love and light. They're telling us how much they love us and they take care of us. And then they have some where it's totally terrifying. They have experiments being done on them. They have some that experience, you know, hybrid programs or seeing their hybrid children. And then others where we're being warned of a cataclysm to come and that we have to, you know, straighten up our act. Do you think that these are just different races that have different agendas, or are they all, they don't care? Are they all malevolent? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, there's only just from, you know, what the research studies, there's only just a few types of aliens that really do abductions. There's evidently a lot of beings visiting here, right? And people might have runs in, but the ones that are quote doing quote abductions, there's just a handful of them. And so you got the classic, you know, the main one is you got the something like 73% or 75% of them tend to be the gray mantoid kind of thing that's going on there. And that's the classic one. Like, I don't know, I think I mentioned it before, Susie Hansen. That's one of the books that, I'd recommend reading, The Alien Agenda for Human Advancement, Susie Hansen's. And, she's probably been one of the most regressed UFO abductees around. But she sees it all as a, well, you know, human advancement. She sees it as a really good thing, and they're all going to come, and it's kumbaya and all that kind of. And then there's Dr. David Jacobs. He was a history professor, you know, for 30 years at Temple University. Said he has a different thing, you know, and this is the book. Hopefully we can see it there if I get it in front of me. Walking Among Us, The Alien Plan to Control Humanity. David Jacobs, PhD, and he sees it as planetary acquisition. So, and Bud Hopkins taught him how to do regressions. And so he's done thousands of regressions. But he's looking at it as a history professor with a historical perspective. You know, a PhD in history is hard to get. So you have a certain, and he just sees it as alien acquisition of the planet, basically. So you have, but it's yeah, what is happening? It's like it's kind of reminds me of the story of the blind man and the elephant. You know, one's got the leg, one's got the side, one's got, you know, the tail, one's got the tusk, and each one of them is describing a different experience. But and you kind of have to put it together to figure out what the elephant looks like.
Now, when it comes to the abduction contact phenomenon overall, some people, it seems that they either don't remember it at all, or they never have any experiences. Some have experiences all the time. But some people, you know, they may have an inkling of something that happened, and then they'll later get a regression. And it turns out, you know, in the regression, they were taken on a ship or whatever happens. I think I might actually be one of those cases that something may have happened as a child. I've had some missing time. Couldn't quite put my finger on it. But something interesting, I had never seen a UFO in my life until the other day. There was something really big happening in my life. It's a big event, sort of kind of an emotional event. And I was just looking out in the sky, and I'd never seen a UFO before. I always wanted to. And these three orange, bright orange flames in a triangular formation were just going straight up. They stopped, and it was like it acknowledged I saw it. And then it just shot up and disappeared. It was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. And that was the first time I'd seen a UFO. I was so happy about it, but I didn't even think about getting my phone or taking a picture of it. I was mad at myself about that. But yeah, do you think everyone experiences this and just doesn't remember? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, yeah, and that's another thing. A lot of times when people see stuff, they say, why didn't I take a picture? Why didn't I? It's just, this is like universal. So don't feel bad about that. It happens to so many people. Well, the thing about the alien abduction experience, there's three basic things that, like all the people agree with. It's intergenerational. That means if you're getting abducted, it means your parents probably got abducted, and your grandparents, maybe even your great-great-grandparents, and your kids would be abducted too. So that seems to be one. And then the other thing, it's everywhere. It's multinational, multiracial. It's everywhere on the planet. So it's happening in South America. It's happening here in North America. It's happening in Asia. It's happening in Europe. It's happening in Africa. It's happening, in Australia. So it's everywhere in the world this is happening. And then the third one, it's clandestine. Who's ever doing it, the system behind it is clandestine. They don't want us to know. And so they wipe memories. And, then you got to realize, if you're an interstellar civilization, their technology is just vastly more advanced than ours. So things that seem almost magical to us are nothing to them. I mean, if we were to go back 300 years and show somebody a computer, it would completely blow their mind. So if they do something with people and people are going, whoa, this is amazing, we should just put it in perspective.
And there are some days I'm completely convinced that we're just an experiment for them, that they're just messing around with us, they're tinkering around, that we've been this experiment for years, and some days they're not happy with it.
Yeah, well, maybe we should sue them in galactic court for malpractice.
Definitely think so. Now, getting back to the hybrid situation, do you think that they're actually tinkering with our DNA and making hybrid extraterrestrial humans?
Well, that's one of the things, like when Dr. Jacob talks about, he's studied this stuff back. He gets like the family journals and researches this stuff back. And he says, a lot of this stuff didn't happen 150 years ago. And then he's seen a progression in the level of quote hybridization, until finally he has this group called hubrids that look exactly like people. But the thing is, they look like ordinary people. They're the most ordinary people you admit. They're not too tall. They're not too short. They're not too fat. They're not too thin. They're not too good looking. They're not too ugly. They're just like the most ordinary people you could ever imagine, except they have capacity for telepathy and ability to control humans. So it's more like they're making one of their selves to live among us, using human DNA to make something, like something that's more like them that looks human, but it's not. Yeah, so it's not like an equal breeding thing here. It's sort of like a selective hybridization in ways I can't really understand, because, I'm not an alien scientist and working in their craft.
Well, that brings up other questions. Do these hybrids know they're hybrids? And, if they're walking amongst us, and, what type of agendas do they have?
Well, they had, they know they're hybrids, and one of the things is a lot of times the abductees were being taken and they're doing all kinds of experiments, taking out genetic samples and stuff. But then after a while that slowed down. And then a lot of the abductees were now training these hubrids to live on Earth, turn the television off, go shopping, drive a car, go to the bathroom, which is the right bathroom, right? Do all the little things, that you would normally do. And that's what they've been doing. And getting jobs and stuff, and working among people, because they can read people's minds, and then they can put thoughts in those people's minds, and they can even control people, and even though they look just like us. So So they're like at a huge advantage. So there are a lot of them, the hubrids seem to end up, you know, being corporate advisors and stuff.
Last time we talked about a little bit about this hierarchy situation where it seems like the mantids are like the scientist types, and then they have the reptilians are in charge. But I'm wondering, I've heard oftentimes that there are actually humanoids that are above the reptilians in some cases. Have you ever heard this?
Well, the reptoids don't seem to run the mantoids. There seems to be another race of like crinkly skin, something or other, that's really, really ancient that seems to be there. But it seems like one of those reptoids, they're kind of like muscle. That's what they are. They're more like muscle. I think the mantoids probably have a higher hierarchy. They use them as muscle. And they're almost their own independent group as well. So they have to get along, but they don't, it seems to be like this hierarchy of the mantoids, the gray types, and some beings behind them, but they don't appear to be the quote reptile things. They're kind of different looking. So I'm not sure. And, you know, they basically muscled in back, you know, according to the history things, they basically, you know, the quote reptoids and their human flunkies were running the earth, running it badly. And so they kind of got muscled out. And these guys came in because they said, look, you guys have screwed things up. We're coming in, we're taking over. And we're going to be running things. And if we need your help, we're going to call on it. But you know, you're in trouble. You know, Galactic Police are here, and you're going to have to do what we're told. And so the reptoids just do what they're told because they don't have, or they can leave. You know, that seems to be the choice.
Now, you mentioned briefly the screen memories and how they, you know, you get your memory wiped. It makes me wonder about the type of technology or what type of abilities these beings have to be able to project images or adapt to your consciousness and, you know, make you see what they want you to see or what's in your consciousness or subconscious. What do you think about that?
Oh yeah. They from all the descriptions that people have, that's what happens. They can just basically block memories or replace a memory with a fake memory. Because they can evidently read people's minds and control their minds and some, you know, and it's, you got to remember this. This is super, you know, these things are so way advanced over us that, you know, so it might seem magical, but it's probably just technology. And so they have, because they don't, it's like clandestine. They don't want people to know what's going on. They don't want, you know, people talking about what's going on. They don't want, you know, they want to do this under the covers. So, you know, it's, you know, if that's what they're doing, it's probably, you know, maybe not in our best interest.
Something else that's really fascinating is the accounts that when these grays would take people, they could float them up through the ceiling or through walls. It's like they changed their frequency or their density, and they were able to just phase through solid material.
Oh, yeah. They've had reports of these UFOs can fly right through mountains or through the earth. If they want to get to one side of the earth to the other, instead of flying around the earth, they just go through it. So they somehow, you know, so that's impossible. No, they just, it's some physics we don't understand. They can kind of go out a little bit out of phase, and then they can punch right through the earth. And that also would work if you're traveling between the stars, right? If you're traveling really fast and you run into just even a tiny pebble, it's going to totally destroy your craft, right? So, but if you were to phase out, and you could travel through and you're not directly in the same frequency as the matter, that you would just pass through each other and there wouldn't be any damage, which would make really good sense. That would be a really good technology to have if you're traveling through space. So you can just, so if there's dust or rocks or anything, you just fly right through it because you're kind of out of phase a little bit from the universe, the rest of the universe.
Well, we're talking about UFOs. I don't know if this is something you've come across, that the phenomenon seems to have kind of adapted with technology. It seems, you know, back in the day they used to have the airships and then the saucers, the very metallic looking saucers. Now we have more like energy plasma ships and different types of things that we didn't see before. It seems like the phenomenon is also adapting to our technology and our society.
Oh yeah. They've got they need to step up the thing. They could probably get away with anything back in the past, you know. But, you know, people now have, you know, we got lasers and missiles and all kinds of other things, you know, that, you know, they've had the case, the quote Roswell case. Allegedly, they crashed because they were using these super powerful radar and it was screwing up with their system. So now they've got to come, you know, and there's a lot of cases where they can cloak themselves. They'll be there and they'll just disappear there. But then you can still see them in the infrared. So, yeah, they've got to be sneakier. and move up with technologies that can defeat, you know, whatever we have. So they can't, we can't see them on radar. We can't see them visually. So they can go around doing their business without, you know, being interfered with. But they had to step up the, their level of action because, you know, humans are gaining technological skills.
And they have the issue of some of these might be our own or, you know, our military black projects. Now, you know, you consultant for MUFON, how what's the best way to tell if this these things are one of ours or if it could possibly be off planet?
Well, probably because you can see it and maybe it crashes because, you know, so that's, you know, that's those are two things that, you know, things happen with our planes and stuff. Remember, you know, who's the same guys that are making these UFOs, these the secret space fleet, the same guys that make like the F-35. So, yeah, you might have a few problems with it now and then. So, and I think a lot of the probably clunky stuff, you know, that's like more maybe acts primitive, you know, more like aeronautics. It doesn't have, you know, it has cool features, but maybe not the all the highest stuff. So like imitation things. I know they got a carbon fiber disc that uses fuel cells to drive it, but they just don't have, you know, they don't have this power source. So they, you know, the power source, they mostly use because they looked at, you know, places where they landed. And those suckers have the same density as like a submarine. They're like mostly metal. Whereas a lot of the US stuff or the things, these things are really, really light because we don't have the power sources. We don't know how to make them. So they have to make really super light craft and float around. So that's probably one of the identifying features.
Speaking of our stuff, how advanced do you think we are when it comes to, say, the secret space program? Do you think we have off-planet operations that are already going on?
Oh yeah, they had stuff that went out there, but you gotta realize, you know, I'm sorry, but the quality of, you know, human technology isn't that high, and you know, I would not fly human starship between the stars, frankly. You know, sucker breaks down out there, you're dead. You're just a floating corpse in the middle of super space. Nobody's going to see you for a billion years. So yeah, it would be, yeah, they may have stuff, but you know, if it's the same quality as the F-35 or some of this other things, you know, you're taking your life in your hands. I'm sure there's a lot of, if there is a secret space program, there's a lot of, you know, lost craft out there floating around and frozen out in outer space somewhere. So yeah, it would be, yeah, I wouldn't see it as a very efficient or you know, it, they would have problems.
There's theories that there are extraterrestrial bases all over the planet, underground, in the ocean, and there are reports of, you know, ships that go into the ocean at incredible speeds without even slowing down, and it doesn't even, you know, affect the water, any, all kinds of things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think that they have actual ET bases that are underground in different places?
Oh yeah, all over the place. And different ones have different types of bases. I know when Trevor James Constable, he lived in LA, they had one off the coast of LA. It's probably still there. And you know, he'd see stuff come in and out. If you want to go look for it, just comes in and out of the water and there's nothing you can do to get down there. And they can phase through rocks. So, you know, they don't have openings. Like they had one up here in Granby, which is in the mountains up here, they had some another different batch of ones. They had some people being abducted. She was lying on the table and she could see the view screen. And she was recognized, you know, where she was flying over. And then they went into a mountain somewhere. You know, they got 500 feet of granite between them and the surface. How are you going to get to them? How are you going to know what's that? So it's difficult there. And then, and people are weird too. Because like when Trevor James Constable, he told me this one story. He was in, he lived in San Pedro, California. It's right by the coast there. And he's like, this is back in the 70s. And he's walking in and this mom's there and this little kid's saying, what's that, mommy? And there's like this little 12-inch disc, you know, a couple inches thick, just sitting there right above the, you know, 10 feet up in the air. And she looks at Trevor and says, what is that? Oh, and Trevor says, oh, that's a monitoring disc. And then it was all right. And she just, oh, that's a monitoring disc. She just takes little Johnny into the store. It's like, whoa. So, you know, you just tell him something, then he'll just be happy with it. It's, but you know, that's the kind of stuff that goes on. And it's, I think they've always been here. They were here before when our ancestors were hunting the mammoths. So it's nothing new.
How much do you think our government really knows about this or is involved with?
Well, they know a lot and they probably are involved, quote, with some of it, but, and maybe have contacts with some of the aliens. Like, there's a whole story of President Eisenhower. And, you know, they had the three different aliens came to them, and, you know, and basically the humanoid looking ones, the ones that look like us, said, you got to clean up, you got to stop using atomic weapons and killing each other and improve your moral standing. And I think there was a reddish skin. They kind of said the same thing. And then, and they went with the grays because they said, well, you know, we have this technology. We can make a deal here. You know, you let us do the little stuff here on Earth for our science projects, and we'll give you, feed you a little technology here and there. So, but I'm sure if any technology they fed them wasn't anything threatening. I mean, just give this, like when the, you know, the Europeans came to the Americas, you know, they bought Manhattan for like $22 in glass beads and blankets. So, of course, money was worth more than back then, but still, that wasn't as much as Manhattan's worth now.
Right. Now, all over the planet, there are UFO hotspots. We have a few here in the United States, Skinwalker Ranch, Uinta Basin, Arizona, Sedona, Mount Shasta, just to name a few. What do you think is going on? Do you think these are just more energetic places that they kind of are attracted to? Well, even portals or, you know?
Yeah, Skinwalker Ranch is something. It's not, and a couple of those aren't like alien stuff. That's some sort of interdimensional stuff. You know, weird beings. That's like something from a parallel dimension or higher or lower dimension or some.
Strange. You think there's a difference? Because I'm going down this rabbit hole where it may be kind of closerly connected than we think. But, you know, I'm not sure, but I'm still kind of going down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, well, I used to live in Arizona and, you know, knew a lot of Indians and wee stuff. And, you know, those skinwalker creatures are real. You know, they're people that go through the witching way and, you know, go to the dark side, and there's things they have to do, like sacrifice close family members and stuff. So there's a whole thing on that. And you know, but I've had people, you know, they're driving down the dirt road. They got one of these strange skinwalker thing creatures chasing their car, right? They're going 60 miles an hour on a dirt road as fast as they can. And this thing is keeping up with them right behind them. What the... You know, not even an animal can go that fast. So there's some,
like a dog man type creature.
Yeah, one of those things. Yeah, some weird. You know, that's just totally. You know, that's in the paranormal. I don't think that's something. It's something from here on Earth. You know, in the fairy lands or one of those things that's the, you know, paranormal things and stuff. I've had people that's seen that. You know, what are they going to say? It doesn't happen. You know, they experienced it. You can get some weird. Weird stuff.
Well, some of the things I've had, a few of the guys from Skinwalker Ranch, some of the guys that are on the History Channel show right now, and there's a lot of reports of UFOs that, you know, pop up in the area, and they've even had reports of little gray aliens observing them. So it seems that there is some sort of connection there with ufology, with these ETs.
Oh yeah, I'm sure the ETs are probably checking the whole situation out too. That's some weird ass stuff going on there. And
they probably
just the same as people come there to watch, you know, there's people out there spying on Skinwalker Ranch. Well, why not some of these other, you know, they might be checking out the total weirdness anyway, because this has been going on the Utes don't even go into that area. That was like, you know, that's one part, the Utes will not go into those valleys. They say that's, you know, that's where the Skinwalker dwells and that's where you don't want to go. And I mean, just crazy, crazy things, you know, can manifest there. That whatever it is can manifest itself and can look like a giant wolf or some other creature. And, you know, you can blow it all up and then it just comes back next week as something else. And so it's like, yeah, that's some sort of weird paranormal, just beyond weirdness.
What are your thoughts about the other hotspots, like, you know, Mount Shasta or Sedona? Are these places with like portals?
I think Sedona, to a certain extent, maybe Mount Shasta has something to do with it. I don't know. There's some weird, I've been to Mount Shasta and had some weird experiences there. So I don't know. These are almost spiritual centers. And I think there's all those spiritual forces that go there. I think there's higher and lower dimensions, you know, and parallel dimensions. And some places it's thinner. And so those things can bleed into our side of a reality.
Yeah, I'm starting to think that a lot of that is actually connected to ufology, that possibly some of these entities that people think are extraterrestrials, I mean, they are, they're alien to us, they're just extra dimensional, they're always existing beyond our spectrum of vision, and they can pop in and out whenever they want. I also believe that there could be some that are coming from billions of light years away, or, you know, however far away these aliens exist, that they're traveling on ships and coming see us. I think it may be a mix of both. And I think in some ways it is connected, but you know, it's really hard to figure out all that stuff.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's really hard. All the that's just the weird, you know, paranormal things. Yeah, they are. I think it's all interconnected, but there are definitely, there's, you know, there's more nuts and bolts things. And then there's like, for instance, the grays. If you do a lot of the gray abductions, you know, there's physical abductions. They come down and do stuff, right? And they take people away. And then there's kind of like spiritual abductions, you know, just as people can astral project. They can, there's kind of like the aliens can astral project, and they go down and like, they do like an astral projection abduction. So the person is still in their bed, but they pull their soul or whatever it is into their astral zone and then do, you know, their other stuff. But so they can do both. And so we just, you know, like we can remote view people. We're just starting to learn how to remote view, and they can obviously can already do that. They can actually see the future to a certain extent because they have technology that can read what people see. So they evidently can remote view themselves, but then they can record what their remote viewing sees on some sort of electronic form or whatever form they have. So they can actually, to a certain extent, see the future and stuff, or maybe even the past.
Very cool.
Yeah. So they have, I mean, their level, we have, you know, you go to the crypto viewing guys. I don't know if you've seen them on the, you know, they do amazing things. They view things, what's going to happen next month, what's going to happen a couple months from now. And they're pretty accurate on a lot of things, right? They've hit some amazing hits. And now, you know, that's just a bunch of guys doing it, right, who've been practicing it. So, and, you know, who knows what if that had been, you know, a whole program. I mean, the CIA had a program, and it's still running somewhere under some other cover. They haven't stopped it. So you have, you know, and that's just rudimentary. That's like super primitive compared to, you know, the other ones. They probably are even, you know, infinitely more advanced than we are. You know, they see stuff that happens before it happens.
Right, yeah. Now, is there any other cases that you've worked on that you find very interesting that you could talk about?
Well, I guess there's one. There's one guy, he was, you know, he had been abducted, sort of, and they didn't treat him bad, but they taught him how to make this technology. And it was really interesting. It was like sort of a drive shaft or something for the UFOs. It was like a big ring, low pressure hydrogen gas in it, and a couple other things I won't describe too much. And he had built it, you know, under their direction. And, you know, there was a few things he didn't have, but he was running it. And I guess it did some amazing things. And one day they came knocking on his door, and it wasn't the aliens that came knocking on his door. And they said, "You can't do this anymore." And so they took it all away, roughed him up stuff, and said, "You can't do this anymore." And then he came to MUFON and told us about what had happened.
Men in Black type people?
No, it was not Men in Black. These were definitely feds of some sort.
Okay, yeah. I got you.
They were quite human and, you know, and typical, you know, fed kind of behavior.
Well, what are your thoughts on the Men in Black? Do you think those are actually non-human type or hybrids?
They're not. I don't know what they are or who they work for. They're definitely one of those... Yeah, they're not from around here. You know, they may be humans that are working for, you know, humanoids that are working for aliens or something, but I don't think they work for any Earth government. They seem to be running their own operation, and then they don't take orders from Washington.
Yeah, definitely. Now, what are your thoughts on, I guess you could say it's disclosure. I mean, I hate to say that, but what's going on in the mainstream media, the drip, drip, here we, you know, real UFOs, you know, yeah, well, it's all planet this. And, you know, where do you think they're going with it?
Well, the latest thing just came out last week. Supposedly the military came and did something with the Senate Armed Services Committee and showed them, you know, showed them pictures of alien parts. Crash saucer craft. I'm not sure they showed the bodies. Allegedly, back in the 60s, they had a underneath the Capitol, because they got the railroad, they used to have a, if you got high enough, you get to go down there. And they had like alien bodies in big jars. And so when you went to the, so you walk by to catch the railroad, and here'd be like some big alien, this little alien bodies in jar, you know, glass jars, well, glass containers, right? Say, "Hey, look what we got," you know, just kind of blowing their mind, because, you know, they're, "Oh, yeah, we're going to take you to the top secret base. And you're never going to tell anybody about this stuff because you're on the inside now. And of course, you're going to vote for the next arms appropriation, aren't you?" And so, yeah, and then we guess that Catherine Austin Fitz. You heard the Catherine Austin Fitz. I mean, she discovered she was working for HUD, and I think Reagan or whatever it was, Bush, whatever she was working. And she discovered all this money started missing. And then that Professor Skidmore, he and his grad students learned about it. They went out and they discovered $21 trillion missing of cost overruns. Like, I think it was, what, 2015, the Army budget was like, what, $221 billion or something like that. I don't have the figures exactly with me. Maybe they're somewhere here. And then the cost overrun that year in the Army budget was $6.5 trillion. 55 times bigger, right? Whoa, what's going on here? Where's that money going? Okay, yeah, that's, you know, what, $6.5 trillion overrun on a 200 and something billion dollar budget? That's craziness. Yeah, and it got even worse. Maybe we could talk about this another thing, but that same Professor Skidmore and his grad students, you know, they roll over treasury bills, right? And so there's so many treasury bills in the 6 month, the 1 month, the 30 year, you know, and so they figured out how much was there. And so because we're still borrowing money, so you can't pay them back, so you have to roll them over. And then they did the calculations, and like, for instance, they claim that they're at least at the end of 2019. Obviously, there's been a little bit more debt running lately, but there was $21 trillion in debt outstanding, right? They ran the amount of treasuries outstanding from the turnover rate. There was like $90 trillion in treasuries out there. Now, even if you take the $21 trillion in overspending that was mysteriously spending, right, that still leaves $50 trillion. $50 trillion that they've sold treasuries, $50 trillion in treasuries are sold. Where's the money? Where'd the money go? What's going on here, folks? $50 trillion, right? We're a $15 trillion economy, right? That's like four times bigger. Yeah, something's, uh-oh. Yeah, so you get that stuff. And, you know, I don't know, you know, that's it's even worse than flying saucers. Yeah, how about that disclosure? Where did all the missing money go?
Right, yeah, I know.
Maybe that's, they're going to have to come clean on it, you know? Oh, we had to build this underground system to protect us against the evil alien invaders. That's where that $21 trillion went, or that $50 trillion went. Yeah, we were doing it for your good. I can't see them ever disclosing. Well, if they do disclose, it'll probably be a BS thing. Who is that? What is that professor lady's name? She was the one that worked with Wernher von Braun.
Oh, I don't, it's not in my head.
I met her once. She worked with my dad back at the MX Missile Project.
You're talking about, but I don't have her name in my head.
Yeah, she's got the crazy white hair. Yeah, and she worked with Wernher von Braun, and he was telling her all the steps they were going to do. It was going to be terrorists and all this stuff. And he said the final card they're going to pull out is the alien card, the alien
invasion. Yeah. Card.
So maybe they're getting ready to pull the alien invasion card out, and you know, the evil alien coming. You must give us all your money to protect you. You know, without us, you will die. So give us your money now and obey everything we say.
Now, if they don't do the alien invasion, I don't think they would ever come out and disclose anything. The reason I think is because they don't want us to have the technologies. They don't want us to have the knowledge, the possible abilities that could come with it. Anything else that could come with disclosure that would benefit us, they don't want. They just want to keep us locked up and enslaved.
Oh, yeah, and that $21 trillion they stole. You would go to jail a long time for stealing $21 trillion, and they might just want to take your toys away from you as well. You know, the people might say, no, we paid for that, not you. That's our technology, not yours. You're going to jail. And they probably don't want to go to jail, so they're not going to tell us. They'll give some BS story, basically.
Do you think humanity is ready? You think most of the planet is ready if we were to just, oh, yeah, if they were to just show up, you know?
Yeah, I think Andy can handle it, but they're already showing up. I mean, I've seen, I don't know, a dozen UFOs over the years, right? It's nothing hidden. You know, most people are, unfortunately, looking at a screen, whether it was the television or this screen, right? When you go outside and actually look up in the sky, not very often. I mean, most people live in their little houses. There could be things going on all the time, and you would never see, because, you know, that's why a lot of the people, you know, people in the rural countryside, they see a lot of stuff. Because they're outside, you know, they're farmers working the land, the ranchers doing this, the truck drivers going across the country, airline pilots, right? They're out there. But most people, you know, they aren't out there really, you know. And so, yeah, it's just, I think it's always been here. And that's one of the things like Dr. Jacobs found out, the gray mantoid, you know, whatever their thing they're doing, is they just didn't care about human religions or governments. It wasn't even relevant to them. to them, it had no purpose or meaning. It's we think our government's wonderful and our religions or whatever, you know, whatever it is, they just didn't even care. It didn't even seem to even, they didn't even consider it. It was like, you know, low down there, you know, whatever superstition. So they had no absolute concern or care about human governments or religion. They didn't mean anything to them, nor did they have any concern whatsoever at all. It was just like, you know, whatever, you know, they just didn't seem to care.
Well, Ken, I think this is a perfect note to end the show on. Everybody go outside and look at the sky. Look and see if you can see a UFO. Ken, thank you so much. That was great information as usual. And, of course, we'll have you back on soon.
Okay, great. Great to be on.